the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The 4-3 decision, the California State Supreme Court has struck down Proposition 22, that state's referendum citizen initiative that had defined marriage as the union of a man and a woman. We're still looking at the decision right now, but it certainly appears that unless some kind of stay is issued, same-sex marriage will become legal in the state of California within 30 days. The court's majority ruled that county clerks and others responsible for issuing marriage licenses must bring their administration of those licenses under this decision within 30 days. Very, very interesting decision that is handed down. Just exactly the kind of thing many people have been warning about coming from the California Supreme Court. In one sense, big shock. In another sense, not so much, just considering what's going on. But looking at this, it's important for us to remember culturally and politically that when you're dealing with California, it's very different than dealing with the state of Massachusetts. Because California, after all, is the nation's most populous state, and it happens that what happens in the law and in the courts of the state of California very quickly tends to have a trickle-down and spreading across America effect in terms of legal precedent. We'll be looking at this in just a moment, and we'll be also talking with Maggie Gallagher of the National Organization for Marriage about what this means, because there is also looming on the horizon there in California the opportunity, at least, for a constitutional amendment to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman. The big picture in this is there are some people who are saying, look, just give it up. This is a lost cause. It's a lost issue. Marriage is being redefined right before our eyes, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. There are other people who are saying, look, we need to just point to this kind of court decision, point out how undemocratic this process is, and call upon the people of California and people of other respective states to take action in order to protect marriage. We'll be talking about all this means. We'll be having Maggie Galler as our guest, and we'll be glad to have you as a caller. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. We have all been very much concerned with the Sichuan province of China, where the devastation from the earthquake that happened earlier this week is now estimated to cost approximately 55,000 lives. And even authorities in China are now suggesting that as every day goes by, the chance is now that both you will have immediate victims of the earthquake and you have a human crisis of disease and pandemic perhaps following, such that the death toll could be much, much higher even than the 55,000 that are at current estimates. It's a great tragedy. And, of course, this comes so quickly on the heels of the cyclone that hit the nation of Myanmar, as I prefer to call it, Burma. And you recognize that you're looking at a couple of nations here, which for similar but different reasons are not well disposed to actually let Western nations know exactly what they might need. I will say that it certainly appears that China is responding differently than the government of Burma in that it is immediately calling for help and especially heavy equipment to move what appears to be giant piles of rubble. And that goes back to the fact that in so much of the world, housing is primarily now concrete. And when you have an earthquake, concrete structures fall. They tend to fall according to a pattern described by architects as pancaking, successive floors upon floors. That makes it very, very difficult to rescue people. The situation in China is also compounded at the human level. Headline from the Independent of London, "How China's single-child policy doubled the agony of parents." You have stories from CNN, many stories actually coming out, because the sadness of so many of these parents, because many of the victims of these earthquakes, especially the earthquake in Sichuan, the region there in China, so many of the victims are young children. Many of them were together in these buildings when they fell. And given China's draconian one-child-only policy, this means that when many of these couples and many of these families lost a child, they lost their only child. It is interesting to see so many in the international media picking up on this. The agony of these parents reflected in the Independent story out of London. Let me read to you from the story. Under the one-child policy imposed in 1979, as a way of reining in population growth already running at dangerously high levels. Most families are limited to one child. The worst natural disaster to hit China in 30 years has brought the spotlight to bear on one of the country's most controversial policies of social engineering, and has highlighted how this policy puts unbearable pressure on many families in contemporary China. You have a People's Liberation Army officer who is quoted here as saying, "This is our only son." As the paper reports, in a country where couples are largely confined to having one child, this is a tragedy that is very difficult to ignore. We certainly are heartbroken in thinking of the loss of any child. The death of any child under any circumstance is unspeakably tragic. But the death of so many children who are the only children to couples, not because of the decision made by the couples, but because of a very tragic policy of the government, that just adds to the agony. At my website at albertmohler.com, overnight I published an article. I also published a book review on Albert Einstein. It has to do with the fact that today in London there is an auction of a letter from Albert Einstein to philosopher Eric Gutkind. It is a letter in which Albert Einstein very clearly makes a statement of his belief that belief in God is childish. Let me read to you from his letter. He says this: "The word God is for me nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses. The Bible is a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish." He goes on and says, "For me, the Jewish religion, like all religions, all other religions, is an incarnation of the most childish superstitions." And then you start looking at all that and you say, well, why is that news in the year 2008? Well, it's news for a couple of important reasons. Number one, this letter was largely hidden. And over the last half century or so, there have been many people who have tried to claim Albert Einstein. You've had both theists who tried to claim that he's some kind of believer in God and atheists who tried to claim that he's some kind of atheist. I think this letter makes clear that he is some kind of atheist. Now, Einstein spoke in often confusing and anecdotal terms. He said things that led some people to believe that he believed in some kind of God, but by the time you actually look at his statements, and this letter really helps to make this clear, he didn't believe in a personal God. He didn't believe in a God who's a moral judge. He didn't believe in a God who's creator. He didn't believe in a God who has a mind or a will. He simply said when he looks at the universe, he sees mystery. Well, mystery is not the God of the Bible. Looking at something in the universe that is, to use his terms, inexplicable, that is not the God of the Bible. It's not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's not the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, why do I bring this up today? It is because evangelicals have an unattractive habit at times of trying to cherry-pick celebrities who supposedly believe in God. Somehow, we tend to believe as evangelicals, and we're not alone in this, but speaking of evangelical Christians, we tend to believe that if we can point to powerful and rich and attractive and famous and obviously intelligent persons who believed in God, it supposedly bolsters our own case, lends credit and credibility to our own theological beliefs and claims. And this can be very embarrassing. It's embarrassing when a celebrity all of a sudden says something that sounds remotely Christian and you have people fall all over the celebrity claiming that this person's now a believer when they've actually made no clear statement about their belief. It's simply some kind of reference, vague or generalized, about deity or about Christ or about Christianity. And the next thing you know, something humiliating happens with that celebrity, and everything that evangelicals had invested in him or her becomes a liability rather than an asset. When it comes to Albert Einstein, a lot of people would look back to him and say, well, look at his great genius. And no one should underestimate his genius when it comes to matters of theoretical physics in the 20th century. But the reality is that Albert Einstein made very clear over and over again that he did not believe in a personal God. He did not believe in God by the definition almost anyone listening to this program would use in defining God. He did believe that when he looked at the universe, there were unanswered questions. And that was some form of mystery. And that, for Einstein, was God. Our belief in the self-revealing God has to do with the fact that we have come by faith to believe that he is, and that he has spoken to us in his word, and that he has spoken to us most completely in his son. We really don't need, and we should not depend upon, borrowed credibility from external sources to try to bolster either our private or our public understandings of the Christian faith. We'll be back to talk about what's going on in California. We really need an update on this. We need to talk to people on the ground. We need to know why what happened in California is important for all of us wherever we live. And we need to be reminded again of why every single one of us has a stake in the definition of marriage. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be right back with your calls. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We were expecting big news out of California, and so it has come. The California State Supreme Court, by a 4-3 decision, has struck down that state's proposition that had defined marriage as the union of a man and a woman, and only the union of a man and a woman. And if my reading of the decision is correct, it looks like within 30 days, unless there is some stay, county officials within the state of California will have to start handing out marriage licenses to couples regardless of gender. With us on the program today are two guests who can help us to understand what's going on. Dr. John Eastman is Dean and Donald P. Kennedy Chair in Law at the Chapman University School of Law in California. He's also director of the school's Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. Maggie Gallagher is the president of the National Organization for Marriage, a nationally syndicated columnist, and she's also been on the ground on this issue. Let me first turn to Dean Eastman. Dr. Eastman, what exactly is this decision in terms of its legal importance?
Well, it's extremely important, partly because California is the largest state in the union by far, but also partly because what Chief Judge Ron George did with this decision is take some critical steps that no other court in the country has taken, not the U.S. Supreme Court in the Lawrence versus Texas criminal sodomy statute case, not the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court in the Goodrich decision. And that step is, I think, what's going to be the most important lingering effect of this decision. And it's to treat marriage between anybody of your choosing, apart from gender, as a fundamental right. And the second step is for the first time to define sexual orientation as a suspect classification comparable to race. No other court in the country has done that, certainly no other appellate court of impression here. And both of those are going to have profound impact, it seems to me.
Well, I can only imagine that they would, and I have so many questions coming out of this. I mean, for one thing, I'd like to know exactly how they define sexual orientation, if they're going to make it a suspect class.
Well, I have to it's a 172-page opinion, and I haven't gotten through all of it yet. But I think the parts of the opinion I've read, they don't define it, and that means it's wide open for future mischief.
Yeah, because
the same thing, it seems to me, with the treating of marriage to and the definition they use here is to someone who you choose to be life partner with. Well, the limitation on that, if it's defined as a fundamental right, and the importance of that language in the law is once we have a fundamental right at stake, like the right of parents to direct the upbringing of their children, this is a fundamental right that's at issue in the parallel homeschooling case we're involved in out here in California now. Once you define it as a fundamental right, government doesn't get to make restrictions on it without a really good reason, a compelling interest. And so if it's a fundamental right, why do we arbitrarily draw that right at two people rather than three people? All of those kind of claims now will come to the forefront. I think there's a reason why the Massachusetts-led Supreme Judicial Court didn't go that route so as not to open that door, why the U.S. Supreme Court in Lawrence versus Texas didn't go that route. Now, what resulted in both of those opinions were fairly incoherent opinions. At least there's logical coherence to what the California Supreme Court did, but it has opened up a huge hornet's nest of future claims.
I can see that. Let me turn to Maggie Gallagher, the National Organization for Marriage. Ms. Gallagher, tell me, what is the bottom line of this in terms of its cultural importance?
Well, this is the first court in the United States, and I actually think it may be the first court in the world to recognize a fundamental human right to same-sex marriage, which is as much to say that our 2,000-year-old marriage tradition is founded only in bigotry and hatred against gay people. It's an extremely sweeping decision, but it's by a very closely divided, and I think it's an incredibly divisive court decision. Dr. Eastman will tell you, will open up the door to a flood of litigation, both within California, and a lot of it, by the way, is going to come be directed against people of traditional faith, who the court has made it clear, if you don't adopt the government's new view on sexual orientation, you are the equivalent of racist in that state. I think that's a very big and dangerous idea. And it's going to, if it's allowed to stand, which I think the good news is that it's very likely the voters will have a chance to overturn it this November, if it's allowed to stand, because California is so large, it's about a third of the population of the United States, it's going to mean an eventual flood of court cases coming out of California into virtually every state of the union in which same-sex couples married in California are going to demand that their relationships be treated as marriages across the country.
Thank you so much, Dean Eastman. Let me turn to you again, and let me just ask you point blank, what do you see as the religious liberty implications of this decision?
Well, you know, when you start defining something as fundamental right, the ability to end up with hate crimes legislation that would chill people criticizing it, those kind of things, there will be intense pressure to go that direction. There's another aspect of this opinion, though, that I want to focus on for a moment. There will be a movement here in California to have a constitutional amendment to overturn this. And the decision is based on the state constitution, not the federal constitution. And so the voters of California could overturn it by a constitutional amendment. But the threshold for getting enough votes to do that has, you know, the burden of accomplishment has now changed from those that would change our longstanding law to now those who would like to defend it. But there is an aspect of this case that I think most people are going to overlook, but I think it's critically important. When the California voters in 2000 passed Proposition 22 by overwhelming majorities that said marriage is between a man and a woman, the legislature then on its own passed a domestic partner statute that essentially created same-sex marriage. But the court now used that statute to say, since the state itself is not distinguishing in the benefits that derive from marriage, there really is no basis other than invidious discrimination for making this final distinction between in marriage and domestic partnership, and therefore it's unconstitutional. They didn't actually say that Proposition 22 standing alone was unconstitutional. It's that statutory attempt by the legislature to end run the initiative of the people that has created the constitutional problem.
Okay, but for those of us who are not in California, maybe a bit confused about how exactly this works, what's the bottom line of all that?
Well, the bottom line is for those that are not in California, there are going to be a lot of marriages here that the courts will mandate be recognized. Those people will then move to different parts of the country. There will be issues about divorce. There will be issues about medical care decisions for life partners. There will be issues about
adoption and children.
And children and all of these things that the remaining states in the country will now in some way have to grapple with California's new court-imposed rule. And it'll be contrary to those states' own public policy. But the numbers that will now be involved may well overwhelm the public policy decisions of other states.
It is good on this day, the very day the decision was handed down, that we have both John Eastman and Maggie Gallagher as guests. When we come back, I'm going to be asking Maggie Gallagher what real prospect there is for reversing this court's decision through the process of amending the California Constitution. And I want to turn to Dean Eastman and ask him, when we look at this court's decision, what does this really say about the status of democracy? You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The 4-3 decision handed down by the California Supreme Court is making news all over the world, and necessarily so, given the radical nature of this decision. It appears to legalize same-sex marriage within the state of California within 30 days. And our conversation today has helped us to understand that it is the actual substance of this decision that makes it even more radical than what took place in Massachusetts or elsewhere at this point. In fact, our guest Maggie Gallagher said she was unaware of anything like this yet anywhere in the world. Our guests today are Maggie Gallagher, the president of the National Organization for Marriage, and Dr. John Eastman, the dean and professor of law at Chapman University School of Law in California. Let's go to Maggie Gallagher, and I want to ask you, Maggie, when you start looking at the opportunity of California citizens to have a say in this now through a constitutional amendment process, how likely is that?
Well, it's almost certain, actually. Your listeners may not be aware, but my organization, nomcalifornia.org, was involved this spring in raising $1 million and working with Protect Marriage. We helped get 1.1 million signatures. They were turned in April 24th. We're waiting for the Secretary of State's office to certify them, but it's far more than the 690,000 signatures needed to qualify. So unless something very funny happens, this should go on the ballot in November, and we have a chance to fight for marriage in California.
Now, my guess is, Maggie, you're going to have an awful lot of people who were mildly interested and concerned before who are now going to be much more dramatically interested and certainly motivated.
Well, I hope so, because we need to raise $10 million to fight a media air war in California. And, of course, there's battles for marriage in Florida and probably in Arizona and here in the East Coast as well. So we do, I mean, there's every reason for people to be urgently concerned if they care about marriage.
We'll be putting links up at the website today with this program as to how people can get involved, whether you're in California or elsewhere, because we all have a stake in this. As has been said, you're looking at almost a third of the U.S. population, and you're looking at the fact that the precedential value of decisions handed down by California courts are pretty huge, spreading across the country. Let me turn to John Eastman, the dean of the law school at Chapman University. Let me ask you, Dean Eastman, when you start looking at this and the reversal or the nullification, basically, of at least the impact of Proposition 22, once again, we're in a situation in which you have a small group of judges basically contravening the democratic will of the people.
Well, that's right. And Maggie's efforts can be applauded. But what's happened here is that the judges have significantly shifted who has the burden of getting a supermajority to change the fundamental law of the state. Nobody contests that the fundamental law of the state throughout our history had been marriage was defined as a man and a woman. The Proposition 22, which was a statutory initiative, passed by more than 20 points. That's a bigger margin than Hillary beat Barack in West Virginia just recently. These things were large. To now have to come back to change the court's mandate to the contrary by a constitutional amendment requires that the supermajority to go back to the policy was already had. Now is on the burden is on those that defend the status quo, not those that would change it.
Well, and that is, again, I think
it's a deeply unfair decision. There's no question about it, and it does shift the burden, and it means a lot of us are going to have to roll up our sleeves and work pretty hard. But that's the reality in California. At least we will have an opportunity. In a lot of states, they don't have a referendum process, and if the judges rule it, there's no really effective way to turn it around. So.
Now, this constitutional amendment process, you're looking at a vote in November, right, Maggie?
Yes, it should be on the ballot this November.
Well, and Maggie, remind yeah. the listeners there what the margin that needs to be done for a constitutional amendment to be
in
given
California,
effect.
In California, it's 50% plus one vote. It's a simple majority vote there. So, you need to, if you're in California, you need to register to vote and turn out to the polls and vote yes. If a majority of Californians do, this state Supreme Court decision will be repudiated. So that's a real possibility. They, by the way, the other side is going to pour millions into defeating it. This is going to be the epic battle for marriage across the country.
Well, given the way that both you, Maggie, and Dean Eastman have described the actual structure, substance, and impact of this decision, it's clear why those who want to redefine marriage would see this as their golden opportunity before, if this decision should stand. It is going to redefine marriage right before our eyes. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. We will take your calls if you call us at 877-893-TALK. It's a great conversation. Glad to have two of the most outstanding guests we could have to talk about this today. And when we come back, we're going to follow up with a couple of questions that will help us to understand where we go from here, where we can go from here, given this court's decision. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The decision handed down by the California Supreme Court was intended to make a major statement, and obviously it did. The decision written by the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court is now reverberating everywhere that marriage is valued. And you're really looking at something that is breaking so many other precedents. It is, to use a word that's necessary here, a very radical decision. My guests today are Dr. John Eastman, the Dean and Donald P. Kennedy Chair in Law at Chapman University's School of Law, and Maggie Gallagher, who's President of the National Organization for Marriage. First, I want to take a call from Dayton, Ohio. Don's on the line. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, my name. I was wondering, does this mean we can have polygamy marriage now? And what about CFR Law 42, Title 18?
Okay. Well, I don't know what that is, that technicality. Perhaps Dean Eastman will. Let me turn to Dean Eastman. You know, you mentioned polygamy earlier. What exactly do you think will happen if this decision stands in terms of challenges on the basis of the number of partners in marriage? Excuse me, we've lost Dean Eastman. Let me turn to Maggie Gallagher. How big an issue do you think this is when you start thinking about your effort there with an amendment to the Constitution? Is polygamy actually in the background?
I do think, now the Supreme Court said in a footnote that it wasn't ruling about polygamy or incest, but the basis for its ruling is that adults have a right to have their families of choice officially recognized by the state. And it's language very similar to that. It's, you know, the right of a family has nothing to do with the child's right to be connected to his own mother and father. It's about how adults have a right to form families any way they choose and have the state accord those families equal dignity and worth. And so, I think at a minimum it provides kind of new material comfort to polyamorous and Muslims and heretical Mormons out there in California. And there will be litigation about this down the road. There's no question.
Yeah, I think the litigation will start there, but it won't end there because you start looking at all the different permutations people can come up with that they will
people
want to classify as marriage.
People can get very creative about what families they think should be accorded equal dignity, and the California Supreme Court is encouraging people to make up their own ideas of what a family is and treat it as a constitutional right rather than a responsibility.
All right, thank you so much. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Fritz is on the line. Go ahead, Fritz.
Yes, I was wondering if Ms. Gallagher could comment specifically about the strategy for at what points they're going to make and arguments they're going to make to the public to convince them to vote in favor, or I guess, I don't know if it's in favor or against the referendum. But
sure.
What arguments are they going to make specifically?
We've had a lot of experience. If you work in a national organization, you can see these strategies unfolding in different states. We've only lost once on the marriage issue when it's been put to the voters. This was in 2006 in Arizona. And what they did there, they tried all over the country, but they did it unusually well in Arizona. They completely de-gayed and demarriaged the issue. So they said, this isn't about gay people. It's not about marriage. It's about taking away benefits from cohabiting opposite-sex couples. And the interesting thing is that they appear to be now, since the benefits argument is the only one that works for them, even though California law currently and will continue to recognize full marriage equivalent same-sex civil unions, What they're doing in other states is trying, as it, such as in around the country, is arguing that the wording of the ballot amendment is unclear and that it may take away benefits from other people. So I think it's, we'll have to see what happens in California. But so far, this is the argument, only argument that's ever worked for them, and they do seem to be organizing around it in other states. It'll be interesting to see whether they want to make the case that the Supreme Court made that race is just the same as orientation, and that people like you and me who think marriage is the union of husband and wife are like bigots who oppose interracial marriage. To date, these aren't the arguments that win with the American people, when, and we'll have to watch as their strategy unfolds.
Now, Maggie, let me ask you specifically about California. I know you're involved in the defense of marriage all over the country, but in California, you have significant ground lost, I think, already, because you have the legalization of domestic partnerships with everything that I can see but the name of marriage.
Well, I think the name marriage is extremely important because, and by the way, so did the plaintiffs who pressed this case and got the Supreme Court to overrule it, because culture consists of words and ideas and images and categories. What they're doing is taking over our words. If we lose the unique legal status of marriage, I mean, the legal benefits of marriage are much less important than they used to be. The very idea that marriage means a union of a husband and wife, if the government changes that, if the courts change that, we won't have a word that means that. Our children are going to be taught that marriage itself means something else.
Yeah.
The word husband is going to mean in California either a man in a particular kind of union with a woman or a man who has a permanent sexual relationship with another man. This is a really important fight. Some people say it's just a word, but some words are really important, and marriage is a word that has deep meaning for people in California and elsewhere.
Yeah, I could not agree more wholeheartedly with that, and that was a very articulate way of defending the word, because there are a lot of people, I think, who would consider themselves friends of marriage who simply wouldn't see what is left there. It has to do with the fact that our language is more real than a lot of people would want to believe.
Well, plus, the other aspect of this, one of the reasons gay marriage advocates fought so hard, even though they had the legal benefits of marriage, is this other argument, this religious liberty impact. Basically, if the law says, well, marriages are a special union of husband and wife, then the rest of us who are from religious traditions that see that as a sacred status, we can't quite be treated like second-class citizens or racists in our own states if we believe that, if the law says that too. And that's what I believe in for many, many of the architects of the gay marriage debate. This is really what this is about, making sure that gay is treated exactly the same as race, which means Christians and others of traditional faith are really the exact equivalent of racist bigots.
Yeah, I think that's very important. Maggie, we got just a few seconds. I want you to be able to give the website where people can join you in this effort.
Well, nomcalifornia.org, nomcalifornia.org, will be taking the fight in California this fall.
Thank you so much, Maggie Gallagher. Is one of the best equipped persons to deal with this as president of the National Organization for Marriage, nomcalifornia.org. We'll put the link up at the website. Hope you'll join the effort there as well. I hope the point has been adequately made that we all have a stake in this. It's not just about California. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. That last exchange with Maggie Gallagher was really important because it gets to why I am concerned that many evangelical Christians say, look, this is just something not worth fighting. You know, let's go back to a conversation we had on this program several months ago, and it had to do with a controversy over a book for children that had been signed and sent home. And it had different pictures of family units, and it was making the relativistic and very pernicious argument that family structure is just whatever it is, and all family structures are potentially different and just as good as any other. There's no normal. And then you start looking at the kind of phenomenon Maggie's talking about when you use the word husband. Well, where is the husband? Now, you may recall that just a few days ago, frankly, on this program, we were discussing the cover story in the New York Times Magazine having to do with young gay men getting married in Massachusetts, where, at least until now, has been the main place same-sex couples would get married. And about how some of them, at least, even in their homosexual marriages, began to mirror or mimic a heterosexual relationship, even with some considering themselves husband and the other wife. You start looking at this and you realize we are fundamentally corrupting an entire institution that has taught us not only what marriage is, but a great deal about masculinity and femininity, about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mom, what it means to be a dad, what it means to be a husband, what it means to be a wife. And you start erasing those categories in human existence, and you're looking at a radical redefinition of what it means to be human. You're looking at a radical redefinition of how we order human society. You're looking at children who grow up with a very different understanding of what it means to be human, and such that their expectation. And don't miss this. This is exactly why marriage has to be subverted if you want to bring about a radical reorganization of the culture. You've got to subvert marriage. You've got to redefine marriage, because marriage as an institution cries out that this is the expectation. This is what you should be aiming for. Little boy, you should be expecting to grow up to be a husband. Little girl, you should be expecting to grow up to be a wife. And that's exactly what many in this society want to subvert. That's why the feminists had to look at marriage and say it's a domestic concentration camp. And that's why those who are now pressing for same-sex marriage have to say, look, it's a fundamental human right to associate with whom you want to associate. You start looking at that and you realize this isn't just about a court decision in California. It's about the future of humanity. There's more to it than that, of course, but there's not less to it than what you've heard on this program today. We'll be tracking this with you. This is an evolving story. Let's hope that the citizens of California will amend their constitution to nullify this decision. But even then, the battle won't be over. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.